The AI Today podcast, produced by Cognilytica, cuts through the hype and noise to identify what is really happening now in the world of artificial intelligence. Learn about emerging AI trends, technologies, and use cases from Cognilytica analysts and guest experts.
Hello, and welcome to the AI Today podcast. I'm your host, Kathleen Mulch.
And I'm your host, Ron Schmelzer, and we're having a really exciting and interesting time here as we're interviewing thought leaders at South by Southwest 2024. And, you know, it's interesting. There seems to be a theme. There's a lot of conversation going on about AI's role in health and medicine. And I think, you know, there's no hiding why. Of course, you know, many of the major problems we have in life are around personal health and wellness and all sorts of stuff. And we all have hopes that AI and more intelligent forms of automation and, you know, getting generative AI capability, all the stuff we're talking about really will play a positive role. And for those of you that are listening to us anew, first time listeners to the AI Today podcast, you should know that we focus on what is happening with AI today. Been going strong since 2017, over 400 episodes and 7+ years going into it. And well, of course, we don't have we never run out of things to say, and that's part of the reason why we enjoy going to events like South by Southwest, because they really help us stay in touch with what is actually happening with AI today. And of course, this episode is sponsored by our friends at Intel, but you'll hear more about them in just a few minutes.
Exactly. So as Ron mentioned, we're so excited to be able to interview thought leaders in the space and get to hear how AI is being applied and being impacted in many different industries. So for today's podcast, we have Dr. Jesse Ehrenfeld, who is president of the American Medical Association. So welcome, Dr. Ehrenfeld, and thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. Excited for our conversation today, guys.
We are too. We'd like to start by having you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about your background and what your current role is now at American Medical Association.
Sure. So the most important thing to say is that I am a practicing doctor. I saw a bunch of patients earlier this week. I am an anesthesiologist. I work in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And I've been in practice for about 20 years. I'm the current president of the AMA household name, largest, most influential group representing physicians across the nation, founded in 1847, purveyor of the Code of Medical Ethics and lots of things to help physicians practice healthcare in America today. Grew up on the East Coast, Wilmington, Delaware. Both of my parents in healthcare. Mom's a psychologist, dad's a dentist. Knew I didn't want to be a dentist or a psychologist at an early age, but was drawn to medicine. And so, you know, early on in college, decided I want to go to medical school. And then in medical school, I fell in love with the practice of anesthesiology. I love being in the operating room where there's a lot of technology, a lot of opportunity to innovate and think about how we can deliver care more safely, more effectively, so on and so forth. So I trained in anesthesiology at Mass General, was on faculty at Harvard for a while, did a master in public health at Harvard. I also did an informatics fellowship. So I'm board certified in both anesthesiology and clinical informatics. I'm the first informatician board certified to be president of the AMA. It's a relatively new specialty designation. And I also spent 10 years in the Navy. I signed up for a commission as a reserve officer and deployed in 2014, 2015, where I was in Afghanistan, treating soldiers in the southern part of the state. Really high impact work, grateful for those opportunities to serve, but also influence health policy within the DoD. Along the way, I've done a lot of work around advocacy, particularly for LGBTQ patients, LGBTQ service members, in a variety of contexts. Got a White House News Photographer Association Award, an Emmy nomination for some of that work, which maybe is a subject for a different podcast. But foundationally, everything I do comes down to understanding how we can support the delivery of high quality medical care to our patients, informed by my work in active practice. And it's a privilege, it's a humbling honor to serve as president of the AMA, which obviously has a long history going back to 1847.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, a lot of great background. Actually, interesting overlap, because we do spend a lot of time with the folks in the government as well. We're in the DC region, so probably goes without surprise. We have a lot of folks who are in many government institutions. Maybe you may know Dr. Gil Alturovitz, who's now running the National AI Institute out of the VA. And I encourage our listeners, we will link to that in the podcast as well, where we hear about, you know, using informatics and data and automation and AI for many of the problems. But that's another podcast for another time. So we will not go into that. But there's some things happening here and now, and we're really excited about much of what you're saying, what's going on at the AMA. And one of the things that our listeners may or may not know is that the AMA recently issued some new principles for AI development, deployment, and use, which is interesting out of the AMA. So maybe you can tell us a little bit at a high level what these principles are and kind of why the AMA felt that it was time to publish these principles now.
Well, so it won't surprise you, but doctors have been burdened with a lot of technology that has just sucked and not worked and been a burden, not an asset. And we just don't want that anymore. And we don't want that with AI. And so we released this set of principles in November, which really comes in response to concerns that we're hearing by both physicians and the public, right? Public has a lot of questions about these systems. What do they mean? How can they trust them? Security, all of those things. So our principles are guiding all of our work, our engagement with the federal government, Congress, the administration, as well as industry around how do we make sure that we set these technologies up to work as they are developed, deployed, and ultimately used in the care delivery system. So these principles did not come out of thin air. We have been working on AI policy since 2018, but this is the latest iteration, and they really call for a comprehensive government approach to AI. We've got to make sure that we mitigate risk to patients and make sure that we maximize utility. And these principles came from a lot of work to get subject matter experts together, physicians, informaticists, national specialty groups. And there's a lot in those principles. You can go to our website, ama-assn.com to find the principles in total. But a couple of really important points. Above all else, we want to make sure that healthcare AI is designed, developed, deployed in a way that is ethical, equitable, and responsible and transparent. And our vision and perspective is that compliance with a national governance policy is necessary to develop AI in an ethical and responsible manner. But voluntary agreements, voluntary compliance is not sufficient. We need regulation. And we should have a risk-based approach. You know, the level of scrutiny, of validation, oversight ought to be proportionate to the potential for harm or consequences that an AI system might introduce. So if you're, you know, using it to support diagnosis versus a scheduling operation, you know, maybe it requires a different level of oversight. I'd also add that we have done a lot of survey work of physicians across the country, understand what's happening in practice today as increased usage of these technologies is happening. And our survey work is the results are exciting, but I think it's also probably should serve as a bit of a warning to developers and regulators. Physicians in general are very enthusiastic about the potential of AI in healthcare. 65% of US physicians, nationally representative sample, see some advantage, right, to AI in their practice. You know, helping with documenting things, helping with translating documents, assisting with diagnoses, getting rid of administrative burdens through automation, prior authorization, but their concerns. And so 41% of physicians say that they are equally as excited about AI as they are frightened. And concerns are about patient privacy, the impact on the patient-physician relationship. At the end of the day, look, I and my colleagues, we want safe and reliable products in the marketplace. That's how we're going to get trust of physicians, of consumers, and obviously all of our work to support the development of high quality, clinically validated AI comes back to these principles.
Yeah, you know, it's great that you're thinking about this, that you have now published this, and we'll make sure to link to that in the show notes for our listeners as well if they want to dig a little bit deeper. But I think that, you know, this conversation around trust and trustworthy AI and how it's being used really does impact everybody, especially when we talk about healthcare. And you talked a lot about, you know, privacy, data privacy, and that's another area that's really on the top of a lot of people's minds, especially when it comes to their, you know, personally identifiable information, that personal healthcare data. So what have you seen what's important for people to know about their health data privacy and security when they're engaging with these AI-driven platforms about their health? Maybe, you know, what have you personally seen and what are what's the AMA saying that people should be looking for and looking out for?
Yeah. What I see is more questions than answers from patients and consumers, including my mother, right? You know, she's got an app. What does it do? Where's the data go? Can I use it? And unfortunately, the federal government, HHS, ONC, they have not really leaned into opportunities that they have had to make sure that there's transparency around where your data is going. And I will tell you, the worst example of this is a company and a developer and an app that they label as HIPAA compliant. And in the mind of like the average person, HIPAA compliant, oh, like my data is safe, it's private, it's, you know, secure, whatever. Well, HIPAA compliant for this app, they're not a covered entity. And HIPAA only applies to covered entities, right? Engaged in healthcare transactions. And so they are HIPAA compliant, but they're not covered by HIPAA. So saying you're HIPAA compliant when you're not covered by HIPAA is completely misleading. And we just shouldn't allow that kind of thing to happen. A lot of concern about where health data is going. And that extends obviously into AI. You know, patients, 94% of patients tell us that they want strong laws to govern the use of their healthcare data. Patients are hesitant to use digital tools if they don't understand the privacy considerations around it. And so, you know, there's a lot that we have to do in the regulatory space, but there's also a lot that AI developers can do, even if they're not statutorily required, to strengthen trust in AI data use. So, you know, pick your favorite large technology company, Google, Meta, you know, Oracle, whomever. Do you trust them with your healthcare data? Is there a data breach? You know, would you upload a sensitive photo of a body part to their server to allow it to give you some information about a potential condition that you might be worried about? You know, I think you'd find a lot of mixed answers about that, given American perceptions today in the public about, you know, the trustworthiness of some of these large corporations. And what on earth do you do when there's a problem? Who do you call, right? So I think there ought to be opportunities to create more transparency around, you know, where's data collection going? How do you opt out of having your data pooled and shared and go on and so forth? And unfortunately, HIPAA does not solve all of this. In fact, a lot of these applications are not covered by HIPAA. And so there needs to be more done to make sure that we can ensure the safety and privacy of healthcare data.
Yeah, it's very important. A big part of the conversations all around an AI, whether it's relating to health information, your personal financial information, and government information, and always comes down to that question: who do you trust? Do you trust the technology companies, the government, corporations? It's sort of like everybody's got different levels of who they trust and don't trust, and maybe nobody trusts anybody these days. But you know, we're using these systems; they're going places, and unfortunately, we do need some trust. You know, on the plus side, we do have all these positive benefits, right? All the positive benefits we see from AI. In fact, even our sponsors here for this podcast, our sponsor Mintel, they have a really very positive perspective on this. You know, they say that, you know, Intel is the spark for dreamers who do, and they dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. And Intel is the spark for something new, to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel, and you can learn more at intel.com/starts. And from that perspective, with that sort of like, you know, positive, you know, view of like all the things that are possible with AI, you know, where do you see some of the most likely applications for AI in healthcare in the short term and perhaps in the long term and some of these critical success factors?
So a couple of things. One is we have to use these technologies. We're going to have to embrace them if we are going to solve the workforce crisis that exists in healthcare today. And this is a global problem. It's not limited to the United States of America. 83 million Americans do not have access to primary care physician today in America. We could never open enough medical schools, residency programs, which we ought to do anyway, but to meet those demands if we continue to work and deliver care in the same way. You know, when we talk about AI from an AMA lens, we actually like to use the term augmented intelligence, not artificial intelligence, because it comes back to this foundational principle that the tools ought to be just that, tools to boost the capacity, capabilities of our healthcare teams, physicians, nurses, everybody involved to be able to be more effective, more efficient in delivering the care. And I will give you the easiest to understand example of this, which is the first autonomous AI approved FDA device, which is in the diabetic retinopathy space. And you'll instantly see how this framework works. So as you guys know, if you have diabetes, you ought to get an annual eye exam, because if you have diabetic retinopathy, you can go blind, a devastating complication. Well, turns out we have millions of patients in America with diabetes. We do not have enough eye doctors to see them all. So lots of diabetic patients do not get their annual screening eye exam. Well, there is a set-top box that you can put in a primary care office. You could put it in a retail pharmacy. You could put it in a grocery store kiosk. And the machine learning image vision recognition is so good in this technology that the company carries medical liability insurance on the device, right? So suddenly you can screen every patient in the world, right, using this tool to figure out who has diabetic retinopathy and who doesn't. It changes the work entirely of the ophthalmologist. Now they don't have to do normal screening exams. They can just see the patients with the disease. And suddenly you can unburden the workflow by using this technology. What we need, however, are platforms. Right now, we've got a lot of one-off point solutions that don't integrate together. And that's a direction that I think we're starting to see companies move quickly towards. And obviously, we're eager for that to happen in the physician space.
Yeah, I like how you bring this idea of augmented intelligence, where you're just helping the human to do their job better. So no longer do we need to have doctors doing these basic screenings. We can have technology do that. And then the doctors can be seen for the cases that need them, right? If nothing's changed, you're good to go, then just go on your way. You've gotten a screening. You should feel, you know, good about that. And you can do it at your time and your convenience as well. No longer do you need to be bound by the doctor's office hours. I want to go at 9 o'clock at night. I can go at 9 o'clock at night if it's in my grocery store and they're open. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits to that as well. And I think that you're taking away some of that friction. Also, it can be quite scary, maybe overwhelming for people to just go into doctor's offices in general. And there's a lot of emotion sometimes attached with that. So we really do love that idea. But with that comes, again, we always talk about trust. We need to make sure that people feel comfortable and confident using this. And with the broad range of accuracy reports on various AI systems, how can people really vet the quality and safety of health information that they receive through an AI platform? What makes them feel that they can trust this?
That's a great question. And first of all, it shouldn't be on the end user to vet the quality or safety of the output of a device. You know, the FDA's mandate is to make sure that only safe and reliable products come into the marketplace. You know, the FDA does not have the framework that they need to manage and deal with the flood of applications that are coming through for regulatory approval. But important questions remain about what that regulatory framework is, and ultimately, how do we make sure that we have a process that allows us to make sure that when something is available for professional or consumer use, that we can rely on it. We can't afford to get this stuff wrong, because the worst thing that could happen, right, other than like harming patients, is that we lose trust and confidence in these tools and the opportunity to use them as innovation. And so we are trying through a lot of different pathways to make sure that, you know, we have a voice at the table throughout the design and development process. We've got our Physician Innovation Network. It's a free online platform to bring physicians, entrepreneurs together to help fuel change and innovation and bring better products in the marketplace. So companies are looking for clinical input. Clinicians are looking to get connected with companies and entrepreneurs. We also have a technology incubator in Silicon Valley, Health 2047. They have spun off about a dozen companies, meaningful companies and technologies powered by insights that we have as physicians in the AMA. But at the end of the day, it comes down to me to making sure that we've got a regulatory framework that makes sure that only clinically validated products are brought into the marketplace. And you know, we've got to make sure that tools truly live up to their promise and that are an asset, not a burden. And look, if I get a new medicine, and I read the package insert, you know, I can see, you know, what patients were it trialed in. Where did it work? What are the side effects? You know, what does that translate into with an AI algorithm? I think there are a lot of questions about that and a place for us to make sure that we get this right.
Yeah, well, these are some great insights. And I know that by the time this podcast is out, you will have already had your talk at South by Southwest. And so we can make sure to link to that in the show notes if folks would like to hear more about that and the wonderful insights that you share. This has been such a great podcast. And we always like to wrap up our interviews by asking all of our guests the same final question, because you're able to bring your own unique experiences and insights into this answer. As a final note, what do you believe the future of AI is in general and its application to organizations and beyond?
So I don't think that AI will replace physicians, but I do think that physicians who use AI will replace those who don't. AI products, tremendous potential, tremendous promise to alleviate administrative burdens that physicians and practices experience. Ultimately, I expect there's going to be a lot of success in ways that we directly utilize them in patient care. But you know, I would not put my patient information into ChatGPT today because we know that generative AI products have issues. They're not error-free, and we're not quite there yet. But there will be places for large language models to help. And you just look at what's happening in, you know, the virtual scribing space and consumer health engagement and ways to help people take control of their healthcare. There's a lot of excitement there. We need to make sure that we obviously have tools and technologies that address challenges around racial bias, errors that can cause harm, security, privacy issues, threats to health information. Physicians need to understand how to manage these risks, how to manage liability before we rely on more and more tools. But I think that's why you see physicians naturally are very excited about these technologies, but also a little bit concerned to make sure that the tools are ready for prime time when we bring them into the practice or the exam room.
Well, that's fantastic. And I want to thank you again so much. And for our listeners, if you are able to attend the South by Southwest event in person, you might have hopefully have seen Dr. Ehrenfeld speak at the event on the Monday of the event. But of course, this podcast will be coming out afterwards. So for those of you, you can go and watch the replay if that's available and you have access to it. If not, you have heard the insights right here on the AI Today podcast. And as mentioned, we'll link to many of the things we discussed here on the show notes so you can gain more insight. And I would say follow what's happening at the AMA. You guys are really on top of it. A lot of these topics are front of mind for people, whether or not they're even working in the health profession at all. There are people who are working in aspects of legal and risk and many other industries. They're looking to other industries for examples of how they can deal with it. Sometimes people might say, well, let's have someone else take the first bite on this, you know, what they say about missionaries and arrows in their backs, you know. Well, you're leading the way. That's the price of being in front. So I would say on that note, I really want to thank you so much, Dr. Ehrenfeld, for sharing your insights and your thoughts and all the things here with our AI Today podcast listeners.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much. We really enjoyed today's podcast discussion. Like this episode and want to hear more? With hundreds of episodes and over 3 million downloads, check out more AI Today podcasts at aitoday.live. Make sure to subscribe to AI Today if you haven't already on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Amazon, or your favorite podcast platform. Want to dive deeper and get resources to drive your AI efforts further? We've put together a carefully curated collection of resources and tools, handcrafted for you, our listeners, to expand your knowledge, dive deeper into the world of AI, and provide you with the essential resources you need. Check it out at aitoday.live/list. This sound recording and its contents are copyright by Cognolytica, all rights reserved. Music by Matsu Gravas. As always, thanks for listening to AI Today, and we'll catch you at the next podcast.